Gestures grew more violent. "Blow the viewports! Now!" he yelled. Ort depressed the button on his detonator. The reinforced polymer viewports blew away. The tug of the changing atmospheric pressure was immediate. Wires and chunks of broken terminal shot out the fresh wound in the CIC, and across the bow of the Radiant Dawn, a loosened command chair tumbled toward Bauma. He twisted out of the way. The tentacles of the changing atmospheric pressure wrapped around his limbs and tore at him, pulling at his armor. Over the storm of noise around him, he heard shouting, howling winds, ricocheting blasts of shrapnel, roars from the overloaded reactors and frustrated organic screams drowned out the voices of his teammates. He fought the instinct to grab hold of something and let his body succumb to the violent wind. Everything around him blurred. His body was lifted into the air and carried out of the CIC as if by a tornado. He tucked into a ball to prevent his limbs or head from slamming into anything on the way out. As soon as he cleared the jagged remains of the viewports, everything went silent. He was suspended in the air for a few moments before the low gravity carried him back to the planet's surface. He tumbled across the dirt. Ort and Diego hit ground a few feet away, leaving small craters in the red soil.
"That was a hell of a ride,"
Ort said, lifting his huge frame up from the dust. "It's not over yet," Diego said. He pointed at the rhino. "If we don't hurry, we're walking." They dashed across the soil, bounding and leaping. The throbbing pain of exhaustion and lactic acid seeped into his overworked muscles. He didn't let that hold him back until they stormed into the rhino. When he shut the hatch, a wave of relief surged through him. Diego jumped into the driver's seat.
"Go!"
Ort yelled. The vehicle roared off. The vehicle's whirring electric motors never sounded so sweet as that moment when the rhino carried them away from the stricken Radiant Dawn. Diego gazed straight ahead, his focus fixed on the path ahead. That gave Bauma a moment to assess which, if any, of the organics were following them. They were forcing their way out of the hole in the CIC now. Spiders leapt down toward Mars's surface, nothing they couldn't handle with their remaining ammo and a solid Arvamp blast. A guttural screech followed, and Bauma snuck a glance over his shoulder to see the one thing they couldn't take down. The massive frame of the Sentinel emerging from the gaping hole in the ship, its reptilian body squeezed out of the torn metal as if it was hatching from a giant silver egg. It reared back and its jaws opened to let loose a roar. Rows of teeth gleamed in the weak sunlight. The Sentinel slithered down from its perch as a tongue of blue plasma cut through the belly of the Radiant Dawn, a column of azure that torched into the sky. A second later, more fingers of plasma pierced the Dawn's hull. Then a sudden flash of white light swallowed the entire ship. Organics thrown from the Dawn turned to ash in the resulting explosion. The ground trembled, shaking even the rhino as it raced away and a rolling cloud of dust swallowed them. The men each ducked to avoid any shrapnel that might pierce the rhino. Bauma tried to temper the swell of victory as he watched the mushroom cloud form. The war wasn't over yet, but watching those organic bastards go up in flames sure felt like a victory.
"Boom, boom," Diego said, making his fingers into a gun and aiming it back at the burning wreckage.
Bauma took off his helmet and mopped his brow with his glove. They had barely escaped with their lives, and were returning without the supplies they desperately needed. But they had found a piece to the puzzle about the fate of the colony. Even better, they had prevented any other humans from meeting the same fate as that graveyard of ships. That didn't help Sophie, though. She was going to die if they didn't find more cryo-fluid. And if they didn't locate supplies, everyone was going to die. How much worse could it get? Emmanuel's voice crackled over the comms.
"Bauma, do you copy?"
"Copy. We got more organics incoming."
"From the dust storm?"
"That's right," Emmanuel responded.
"Yeah, we heard," Diego said. "We're getting our asses back there as fast as we can to help, but we took care of the bastards at the Radiant Dawn."
"I saw," Emmanuel said. There was a pause over the line. Bauma had worked with Emmanuel long enough to know what that hesitation meant. A knot in his gut tightened.
"He's worse than we thought," Emmanuel said. "Sonya's initial estimates were off. We're not talking about dozens of organics. We're talking hundreds."
Diego let the cold wind of the airlock blast over him. It felt damn refreshing after everything they'd been through.
he could focus on this moment forever, as if the rest of the world didn't exist. A small comfort between two hells. Emmanuel met them on the other side of the airlock with a harsh bite of reality. Sonia estimates at least 300 organics are using that storm as cover. He led them away down the corridor. There may be even more headed our way now, but it's impossible to discern with all the noise from the storm. I knew that blast wasn't going to go unnoticed, Diego said.
Yeah, it may have saved us and given us a bit of time, but now we've let every organic in the region know we're here, Balma said.
Diego rubbed his scalp. His hand brushed over the short bristles of hair coming away doused in sweat. Body odor trapped in his suit found a way into the corridor, filling it with the scent of battle.
Any chance you got the ship in flying condition while we were away? He asked, hoping for a shower.
The ship isn't going anywhere, and we can't stay here, not with that horde barreling down on us, Emmanuel replied.
What about Sophie? Balma asked.
Holly and I have prepared her cryo chamber for transport. We're going to need you guys to help load her into the Rhino. At least we can take her with us.
Well, we figure out what the hell we're going to do with her, Diego thought. He wondered if it was even worth trying to bring her with them. She was as good as dead. It didn't make sense to lug her around when what they really needed was to get out of here as fast as possible. But there was no way he could tell Emmanuel that. It would only waste time and add more stress to the situation. Tension was the last thing they needed right now. He tried a different tack.
Do we know where we're going?
Yes and no, Emmanuel answered.
Sonia has analyzed the risk of the message that was supposed to have been sent from the Dawn. We have a rough idea of where we need to go, but the Radiant Dawn's AI was too damaged. It didn't give us a precise location.
That'll have to be good enough, Diego said. He looked out through one of the portholes. The dust cloud was growing closer, and with it the flicker of blue. He pointed out toward it.
Any direction is better than that one.
Any idea what kinds of organics we're looking at?
Balma asked. Hard to say, but the odds aren't good.
Emmanuel shook his head, and so did Balma. They entered the medical bay in silence. Holly was tending to Jamie and Owen, who were being woken up from their induced slumbers.
Wish we could just stand our ground.
I don't like the idea of running right now, Balma said.
The rhinos aren't exactly meant for holding a crew long term either, Diego agreed.
They'll make them work, Emmanuel said. Our only chance is to run. Even if we could defeat this wave, they now know where we are. We can't hold this position forever.
Ort, gather up all the ammunition and weapons we've got left, Diego said. Balma, help him.
The two disappeared into the depths of the wrecked ship.
Can we move Sophie now? Diego asked.
Moving her chamber was going to be the hardest part of loading up the Rhino. Diego preferred to do that first in case they ran into any unforeseen complications.
Yes, like I said, she's ready, Emmanuel said.
He pointed to a motorized cart waiting to transport the cryo chamber. All the cryostat fluid tubes had already been attached to a mobile fluid filtration and oxygenation system. The difficult task would be positioning the chamber on the cart without losing control of it. Normally, the chambers were transported without people in them, so the carts weren't designed with sufficient redundancies to protect human life.
How are the kids doing? Emmanuel asked Holly.
They're coming too. The biomonitors point to full recovery for each of them. They'll be a lot better out of their chambers for this trip.
At least that was a welcome bit of news.
Good. Jeff and David? Emmanuel asked.
Running up to check on them next, Holly said.
Diego positioned himself near Sophie's chamber and snuck a glance at her as they prepared to move the chamber.
When I unlock it, we need to slide it over these rails.
Emmanuel pointed to the half-meter-long track that ran from the chamber to the cart.
Ready?
Ready.
On three. 1, 2, 3.
Emmanuel hit the physical release button. Pistons hissed as they drew back from the chamber's scaffolding. The heft of the chamber pressed hard against Diego. While the cart and track system carried most of the weight, it was still enough to push Diego backward. His heels slid across the smooth deck. He pressed his weight against the chamber, working desperately to slow it lest they lose control. He stared hard into the chamber.
Eyes closed. Her light hair drifted around pale features that looked almost translucent. Blue vessels shone under her flesh, and her muscles flexed. Despite the state of her body, there was a calmness in her expression.
Diego had been there when she'd activated the R-Vamp that had fried nearly all the nanobots in her bloodstream. He'd seen the pained expression on her face from a distance, and then she'd fallen unconscious. Now she seemed peaceful. That had given some comfort to Emmanuel, and Diego now saw why.
But he couldn't help wonder if she had any idea what kind of hell was erupting around her.
All because the others were determined to save her life.
"Push!" Emmanuel said, breaking Diego's reverie.
They slid the chamber onto the cart,
and both men let out a long breath of relief.
"Thank you,"
Emmanuel panted. He started to move the motorized cart toward the corridor, but paused.
"I appreciate what you did back at the Dawn, and I want you to know I'm grateful."
"No problem, Doc," Diego said. He studied Emmanuel's sincere expression for a moment longer. It was then he realized how different the dynamics of this team were compared to any other he'd fought with. Except for Bauma, they were academic types and children, for God's sake. And somehow, they had survived the nightmare when hardened soldiers like him had fallen at the claws of the organics. Part of that was because men like Sergeant Overton and Captain Noble had sacrificed themselves so these people could live. Diego tried not to resent them, but once again they were taking risks to save civilians. On the other hand, this is why he was a soldier, to help and protect people, especially the kids, who now might be the last remnants of humanity.
Suddenly he realized why Emmanuel was so determined to save Sophie's life. There were no more governments, no military to defend them. There was no more Earth to return to. All they had was each other. And now, more than ever, every single human life counted.
Diego clapped the biologist on the shoulder. He regretted even thinking about abandoning Sophie and the resentment he'd felt earlier. "Ready, Doc?" Emmanuel merely nodded before carting the cryo chamber down toward the rhino. Diego helped push, realizing exactly what the mission required of him, the same mission Captain Noble had been intent on, to protect what was left of the human race at all costs, even if it meant laying down his own life.
Chapter 7
"How are you feeling?"
Holly asked, brushing back Jamie's hair. The med bay still hummed with the intermittent beeps from the biomonitors hooked up to the children. The young girl yawned and stretched her arms, balling her hands into fists.
"I'm so sleepy. I've never been so tired."
"That'll wear off after a while. Nothing hurts?"
"No."
Jamie's eyes opened wider.
"Should it?"
"No," Holly said. She curled her fingers around the rail along Jamie's bed.
"Do you remember where you are?"
Jamie examined the bulkheads around them.
"The spaceship."
She blinked rapidly as if recalling a painful memory.
"The last thing I remember are the aliens." "They aren't on the ship,"
Holly said, reaching out to reassure the girl. The child shivered, and Holly used her other hand to stroke Jamie's hair. But Holly couldn't hold her forever. Owen needed to be roused next. Then medical supplies and food had to be loaded. Any remaining oxygen supplies had to be moved to their escape rhino. What the children needed most right now was time to adjust to their new environments peacefully. Working Jamie and Owen into a panic wouldn't help anyone. As calmly as she could, Holly continued in what she hoped was a soothing voice.
"We need to get going now. Your legs are probably going to feel like jelly, but can you stand?"
Jamie sat up, then swung her legs over the side of the patient bed. Holly helped her slide off.
"It feels funny,"
Jamie said,
"like a bunch of needles are in my legs." "It's going to feel like that for a little bit,"
Holly said. She helped Jamie walk across the med bay floor.
"Keep walking around until you feel comfortable."
What she didn't tell the girl was that she wanted her to be able to run if they had to. Holly glanced at one of the terminals attached to a bulkhead. Sonya was displaying a live image of the encroaching dust storm on the wall-mounted screen.
A few blue dots shone like beacons at the storm's perimeter. Those were the organics leading the charge. In the corner of the display, a timer counted down. They had no more than 30 minutes before the organics would be on them. If they hoped to escape in the Rhino, they needed to leave much sooner than that. The hatch to the medbay swung open. Balma entered, hair matted and flesh glistening with sweat, his muscles pressed against the white T-shirt he wore.
"Sophie's loaded, and we're grabbing all the food and water we can scavenge," Balma said. "Ammo's in there. Emmanuel sent me back up here to grab the rest of the medical supplies."
"Everything's ready over there," Holly said, jerking her chin toward one of the tables. A few crates and bags were packed on top of it, containing everything from emergency surgical supplies to the last few liters of cryostat fluid.
"I'm on it," Balma said.
He started to walk toward the supplies, then abruptly paused and turned back to Holly. He threw his arms around her and planted a long kiss on her forehead. A comforting warmth spread through her body, radiating from his strength. She lingered in his grip, letting the rest of the world fade away for that moment. Finally, he pulled back from her.
"I was worried to death about you," Holly said.
She felt Jamie's eyes on her as the girl continued walking around the med bay to wake her muscles, but she kept her attention on Balma.
"Gonna take more than a few organics to kill me. You should know that by now," he said.
Holly chuckled and then gave Balma another hug. When she pulled away, he snuck another brief kiss.
"Ew,"
Jamie said, making a face.
"Sorry, kid," Balma said, grinning.
He scooped up the medical supplies and hurried back to the Rhino.
"He really likes you,"
Jamie said.
"And I really like him, too."
Holly's heart ached. She dreamed of a life back on Earth where she was still working at her clinical practice and dating Balma in the normal way.
But at least they were still alive.
Their relationship was like a solitary floating beam in the middle of a shipwreck. It kept them both afloat and gave them hope of a future together. Holly patted Jamie's shoulder.
"Now, can you help me get Owen up?"
"Okay."
A few minutes later, and the boy was yawning and coming to in his chamber, they walked him through all the checkups Holly had performed on Jamie. The girl seemed to take pride in helping get the younger boy up and moving.
That was good.
The job might distract her from their otherwise deteriorating situation.
Time was running out. But Holly couldn't tell the kids that, or they would lose it. Waking them so quickly had been risky enough. Their psyches had bent and flexed on Earth, but adding too much stress too fast, after abruptly interrupting their cryo slumbers, could break them. The kids were healthy enough to be outside the protective cocoon of those chambers. Sophie, as far as they knew, still could not survive without the protection of the cryostat fluid holding her biological systems in balance. At least with the kids out of their chambers, they had an extra few days cryostat fluid they could add to Sophie's supply. Sonia appeared on the screens throughout the medical bay.
"The Rhino will be fully charged and ready to depart in 5 minutes.
"Thank you, Sonia,"
Holly said. She bent down to eye level with Owen and Jamie.
"Hear that? We're going for a ride soon. You two ready for that?"
"Yes,"
they said together. Emmanuel's voice crackled over the comms next.
"Holly, I'm still securing Sophie's chamber into the Rhino. Can you get Jeff and David?"
"On it."
She led the two children, hand in hand, out of the med bay and down the corridor toward the turrets. She tried to portray a cool appearance.
Anything to keep the kids calm.
"What are Jeff and David doing?"
Owen asked, rubbing his eyes.
"They're looking out for organics in one of the turrets," she replied.
Jamie just nodded. Holly forced a smile.
"We're lucky to have them watching our butts."
It was good that the children had such powerful, resilient personalities, but she hated to see such young children have to take on the role of soldier. It was just the world they lived in now. As they hurried up the ladders toward the turret where Jeff and David were keeping watch, cold sweat beaded over Holly's palms. The children looked up at her with scrutinizing eyes.
"We have to hurry,"
Holly said.
"The monsters are back, aren't they?"
Jamie said, matter-of-factly.
"That's why we're in such a rush."
Holly wanted to protect the children,
but she couldn't hide behind a lie. We're safe for now, but we need to leave the ship to stay safe. Owen looked at his boots, and Jamie trembled slightly.
It's going to be okay,
Holly assured them.
Don't you trust me?
They both nodded.
Good,
she said.
Now follow me.
They rounded the corridor past a jumble of broken wires and a singed bulkhead. The smell of burned plastic still hung, acrid and heavy in the air.
Jeff! David!
Holly called as they approached the hatch to the turret. Only the slight hum of the ship's reactors and the whoosh of air through the ventilation systems answered her. She called their names a little louder, and once again they didn't respond.
1 minute and we should be out of here, Emmanuel called over the comms.
Copy,
Holly replied. She opened the hatch and scanned the empty seats in the turret. Cracks spiderwebbed over the damaged viewport, and the displays on the turret glared red with a message that simply said, Error. She felt like a parent who had lost her children in a foreign city.
Maybe they went to one of the other turrets,
she tried to tell herself. But both of the other turrets had been irreparably damaged, crushed against the planet's surface. While it was possible to get into them, there was no space to operate the cannons.
Where'd they go?
Jamie asked innocently.
Maybe they're hiding,
Owen offered. Even without the display ticking down in the med bay, Holly could practically see the seconds ticking by.
Come on,
she said, waving the kids onward. They hurried down the corridor to a working terminal.
Emmanuel,
she said as calmly as she could.
Jeff and David aren't in the turret.
What do you mean?
He asked.
I mean they're gone,
she said.
Can you have the guys check the corridors on your end?
Wait, what the hell do you mean they're gone?
Rapid footsteps exploded down the corridor. They echoed tinnily against the bulkhead. Bauma appeared at the door, breathing heavily.
The armory, he said between breaths. I went back to grab the last of our suits. We're missing two.
That knot in Holly's gut tightened.
What the hell were Jeff and David up to?
Leave them alone for a few minutes.
Her eyes searched the damaged corridor. Behind Bauma was an emergency airlock. Holly ran to it. The children trailed her, peppering her with questions. She couldn't respond to them now. Once she reached the hatch, she pressed her palm against the dust-covered window and peered inside. The outer hatch was still hanging open.
What about the GPS units?
She asked, the words spilling out of her mouth faster than she could think.
Can't we activate their comms?
Bauma cursed under his breath and held up one of the headsets.
I found these. It's supposed to be attached to the suits, Bauma said, and has their tracking and comm equipment. They're heavy.
He turned away for a second as if gathering his emotions.
They must not have worn them because they're too big.
What are you saying?
Holly asked.
We have no way to contact Jeff and David?
Bauma shook his head. Emmanuel stared at the display panel in the Rhino's cockpit as it sat within the Sunspot's vehicle hold. The dust storm would be on them in 15 minutes. That meant they needed to leave now if they stood any chance of escape.
Where the hell are Jeff and David?
Diego asked, starting the motors. They whirred to life with an electric hum. The vehicle shook slightly, as if it, too, was growing impatient.
They were supposed to be in that turret, but must have left to defend us, Emmanuel said. Sonia, broadcast over all public channels. Make sure Jeff and David know we are leaving now.
The AI followed the order, her voice booming inside of the ship. Emmanuel waited a second.
Nothing?
I have relayed your message over all relevant frequencies.
Son of a...
Emmanuel trailed off. He couldn't understand why Jeff and David would have taken off without telling him. Unless they were trying to prove something. He cursed again. That's exactly what they were trying to do, and it wasn't the first time. Ort jumped aboard the transport, rocking it slightly. His face was flushed, and he was breathing heavily.
There's no sign of them on the ship. Holly and Bauma think they took an emergency exit.
We have to search for them,
Emmanuel said. He looked at Diego for a second, ready to argue against any protests.
These were kids, for Christ's sake. They'd saved Sophie and the team before,
and Emmanuel sure as hell wouldn't leave them alone on the surface of some godforsaken planet with a swarm of violent aliens descending on them. But Diego surprised him. Absolutely. They didn't take a rhino, so they were on foot. They couldn't have gone far. A flurry of footsteps announced the latest arrivals. Holly and Balma helped Owen and Jamie into the rhino. The modified electric truck was expansive, but with Sophie's cryo chamber in the rear cargo hold and the latest additions, it was quickly becoming cramped.
Sonia, initiate a hard copy transfer to the rhino, Emmanuel said.
Transfer in progress, Sonia said. Soon all my systems will be integrated completely with the rhino.
Everyone in? Diego asked, sliding into the driver's seat. We're going to find those kids. Sonia, can you complete the transfer while we're on the move?
As long as we're within a 500-kilometer range, she said, it should take me no more than an hour.
No way we can go 500 kilometers in an hour, Diego said. Looks like we're in the clear. Here we go.
Diego punched a button on his console, and the vehicle hold's hatch spiraled open. Dim light flooded into the bay. Winds carried red grit inward, swirling it around the vehicle. Emmanuel settled in beside Holly and the children.
We're ready to... A loud explosion burst somewhere above them.
Emmanuel grabbed a strap in the rhino's ceiling to prevent himself from being thrown forward. The ship rocked as if hit by a tidal wave. A steel beam slammed into the deck behind them, denting it and sending up a shock of metal shards. The children cried and leaned into Holly.
What the hell was that? Ward asked.
The organics appear to have a new land-based weapon, Sonia answered him.
An image appeared on the screen, focused on one of the aliens marching amid a blanket of swirling dust. Emmanuel's stomach churned. Nearly three times as large as a spider, the alien looked somewhere between a tank and a scorpion. It moved on thick, armor-plated legs, and a huge tail coiled behind it. At the end of that tail was a glowing orb, but this was clearly not the type that encased humans. Instead, it looked like a hot ball of plasma.
It's just going to sling that shit at us, isn't it? Ord asked.
Goddamn slinger, Balma said. True to their suspicions, the slinger launched the plasma ball. A few seconds later, a violent blast tore through the sunspot. Chunks of bulkhead crumbled away as a fresh hole appeared above the rhino. The counter Sonia had started didn't take into consideration long-distance weapons, but rather the speed at which the organics were marching toward the sunspot. These new monsters were going to tear the ship apart before the swarm even got there.
Diego punched the throttle, and the rhino jolted forward. They jetted out the crooked hatch, damaged from the attack on the ship. The rhino's wheels spun in the air until they landed onto the planet's surface, then tore into the dirt, kicking up a wide spray behind them. The storm roared in front of them. Two more plasma balls sailed overhead. One smashed into the sunspot, tearing a massive hole in one of the biomes at the stern of the ship. Metal caved in as if it was paper. The other plasma projectile splashed into the dirt near the rhino. The superheated matter was hot enough to melt the dirt and dust into globs of slag that shattered against the rhino's side. Emmanuel tried to ignore the worried exclamations around him as the others turned their eyes toward the sky. He searched the horizon, the rocks, the cliff faces, but he didn't see any sign of the boys. If they were out here, they wouldn't survive long, especially with these slingers now hammering the landscape. More plasma erupted around them, launching geysers of dirt and rock around the sunspot. If the ship had stood any chance of flying before, it most certainly didn't now. Melted slag from the hull flew off when another round hit. Jamie and Owen were wide awake now, screaming and crying in terror despite Holly's best efforts to comfort them.
Sonia, any way to make that transfer faster? Emmanuel asked.
Negative, doctor, she replied. Bandwidth is limited by the rhino's data transfer capabilities, which I fear are vastly inferior to the sunspots.
Great.
If the ship was dismantled before she could complete her transfer, they might be stranded on the planet without a ship or AI support. Their future looked bleak enough as it was, but without her, they would be both blind and deaf.
Diego, take us around the bow of the ship, Emmanuel said. Everyone keep your eyes peeled for footprints or anything leading from that airlock. That should help us find them.
Diego glanced at the display mounted near the dashboard. The timer there blinked red, indicating it was far past their deadline to leave the vicinity of the sunspot. Emmanuel searched their route for the kids, two boys on foot with pilfered EVA suits and weapons. It shouldn't take that long to find them, but trying to drive a comprehensive perimeter around the ship searching for potential locations wasn't going to work. They simply didn't have the time. Then Emmanuel realized he was asking the wrong question. He shouldn't be wondering where they went. He had no way to properly answer that without first knowing why they left the turret. The boys had been tasked with keeping an eye out for incoming organics. Emmanuel knew enough about them that he could expect them to take that responsibility seriously. Even back on Earth, Jeff was willing to act like, often did act like, a young warrior, and the boys were no strangers to firearms. Emmanuel's gaze went back to the turret perched atop the sunspot. He didn't know much about being a soldier, but Sonya had warned them that the turret offered only limited sight lines.
Bauma, Emmanuel started, if you were going to defend the sunspot against the organics coming from the dawn, where would you hole up?
Bauma seemed to sense immediately what Emmanuel was getting at. Another two plasma blasts crashed into the landscape before he answered.
The direct route from the dawn was concealed by all those rocky columns and canyons.
He indicated the hills and crags around them. So this place really wouldn't do,
but you could go over there.
He pointed toward a path that led through the rocky hills.
You'd have the higher ground, some shelter, and good sight lines to the path from the dawn.
The rhino banked hard in the dirt, its suspension whining from the abrupt turn. Diego aimed toward the vantage Bauma had pointed at.
Come on, Jeff. David, you better be up here,
Emmanuel thought. A few more blasts kicked up dust and shrapnel clouds. The wind began to howl more fiercely as the storm approached, and grit ground against the rhino's outer shell. They wheeled around the bottom of a cliff, all eyes searching the precipices for any sign of the two boys.
Look,
Ort said. Emmanuel's heart beat rapidly in excitement.
The boys?
Ort shook his head, still staring out the window. In the center of the pathway was a pile of dead spiders. Their blood, still giving off a wet sheen, soaked the soil. Tendrils of steam rose from their corpses. Jeff and David had definitely been here. Another plasma blast chewed at the side of the sunspot.
Catastrophic reactor failure,
Sonya reported over their comms. Plasma vented from the wound in the sunspot side, tearing through the sky toward space.
What's that mean for us? Emmanuel asked the AI.
Uncontrolled plasma expansion is imminent,
Sonya replied.
If you are caught in this expansion, the vehicle will be incinerated. Total loss of life is likely.
Panic strangled Emmanuel. The boys were nowhere to be seen despite the evidence they'd been here, and now they were really out of time. Not only was there a horde of beasts barreling toward their location, but a reactor failure threatened to vaporize them. Emmanuel's stomach sank at a surfacing question. What if Jeff and David had returned to the sunspot? If they didn't have any comm equipment, surely that's where they'd be headed if they were no longer here.
They could have just missed them. An ear-splitting roar like sustained thunder rumbled over the rhino. Plasma blasts punctuated the din. It's going to blow,
Diego said. He looked just as pained as the rest of them when he turned back.
We have to get out of here.
Emmanuel didn't want to. He couldn't give the order. Couldn't tell them to abandon the search, couldn't leave the boys to die like this. Another plasma blast slammed into a nearby cliff. A wall of force bashed the vehicle, and rocks poured over them. An alarm somewhere in the rhino sang, but Emmanuel's ears were already ringing. Even the near-deafening roar of the failing reactors seemed to be fading away. When the next blast hit, all he heard was ringing as the rhino threatened to topple sideways. Jamie and Owen screamed. Diego was looking back at him, still waiting for the command. There was no more time to delay. They could try desperately to use these last seconds in the ill-fated hope that they'd run across Jeff and David, but that promise was so tenuous and unsubstantial. He couldn't let Jamie, Owen, Sophie, and all the others die here. Emmanuel felt sick when he nodded at Diego, yelling, "Go!" as loud as he could amid the chaos. The rhino shot away from the sunspot and the rocky outcroppings where Jeff and David had killed the spiders. A wake of dust kicked up behind them, quickly swallowed by the strengthening winds.
Brief flashes of blue plasma impacting the land around the sunspot burst in the distance. As the rhino climbed a dune and crested the top, a piercing white light bloomed from the sunspot. The ship disappeared, and with it, the horizon.
Chapter 8.
Athena had run on and on until she couldn't go any farther. For the past hour, she had evaded the organics hunting her by keeping ahead of the pulsating blue glow. But she couldn't keep going. Her body was spent, and dehydration had brought her to the ground. She lay on the sand, staring toward the south, at what should have been salvation. The buried submarine she'd called home for so long wasn't far away. In fact, it was close enough her crew would probably be able to hear her if she shouted at the top of her lungs. The star-filled sky illuminated the bulging hill covering their hideout. She flipped on her night vision goggles to ensure the gusting wind hadn't exposed the metal exterior. It looked secure, and she planned on keeping it that way. Although she was within running distance, she couldn't risk being spotted entering the hatch. Giving away the location of the GOA would end in her death and that of her crew. All she could do was lie here, partially buried by grit, and hope the aliens passed her by or that she made it until morning without being spotted. The crest of the slope she lay on provided a decent view of the area from all directions. She squirmed slightly for a better view of the seabed behind her and scanned the green hue for hostiles. She still hadn't seen whatever was out there, besides the glowing and pulsating blue light back in the ravines, but the whistling told her this was a different type of alien. She'd never heard a noise like it before. The sound persisted, rising and falling with the wind. She pulled the final magazine from her rifle and checked the load. "Only half left," she thought. The remaining EMP grenade was half buried in front of her. She had used the other one escaping the city. It wasn't much, but it was better than being unarmed. Using the utmost care, she shoveled sand over her body. She dug her boots and legs into it, covering most of her lower half. The scratchy whistling grew louder, the aliens closing in from what sounded like all directions. A panting noise followed, and she glimpsed the first sign of the beasts tracking her in the carpet of blinking light that roved over the humps of sand to the north. She shut off her night vision goggles to watch the blue light glimmer over the side of a sand dune. Gray armor covered the upper half of the nearest beast's human-sized body. Two limbs, ending in scissor-like claws, stabbed at the sand to pull the bulbous upper body forward, while a long, snake-like tail slithered behind. A crustacean face searched the sand with black, beady eyes. Slits for nostrils sniffed at the air. It was this action that produced the abrasive whistling noise. Athena held the magazine just under the rifle, not daring to click it back into the slot. She remained prone while three more mounted the hills. Other than the whistling, they moved silently despite their undoubtedly heavy armored shells. Terror gripped her as she lay there, watching the glowing creatures snake back and forth, sniffing the air for a scent. They were heading south. Away from her position, thankfully, but right towards the buried GOA. If those elongated claws penetrated the shallow sand above the sub, they would clank against the metal. She wasn't sure how intelligent these beasts were, but had a feeling they would investigate.
"Please, no. Please."
She watched silently, begging in her mind for the aliens to change course. But the pack continued heading right for her sleeping crew. The time for lying idly by was over. Athena carefully pushed the magazine back into the rifle and pulled back the slide to charge it. The click rang out into the night. Three of the aliens continued their hunt, but the fourth stopped in the sand and turned in her direction, its unblinking eyes scanning the darkness. Rearing its armored head back like a wolf howling, it sniffed at the dry air. The gray plates covering its back pulsated blue as it took in each breath. A ghostly screech followed. The glow from the other aliens was not 200 feet from the GOA.
They froze. Athena grabbed the EMP grenade as soon as the pack darted toward her. She pushed herself to her feet, using her rifle as a crutch, the sand sluicing off her body. Dizziness rushed through her, blinding her momentarily with stars across her vision. It cleared to the side of the four aliens slithering in her direction. "Come on, you bastards," she whispered, clicking the EMP grenade. She studied their movements, trying to time her throw. If she could bring down their shields, maybe she could kill all four with her remaining pulse rounds. Her main goal was to draw them away from the GOA. But if she died, then the coordinates Alexia had given her of both the vehicles and the Pelican Air Force Base would die with her. She couldn't fall before she delivered the message. The beasts closed the gap over the desiccated seabed quickly, using their claw-tipped limbs and tails to propel them across the sand at an impressive speed. The lead creature was a good 100 feet in front of the others, making the toss of her grenade difficult to time. Another few seconds passed, and then she lobbed it over the creature's clunky head. It slowed and twisted to watch the grenade sail through the air and land in the sand. But instead of continuing toward her, it turned and slithered toward the device. Using its tail, it slapped the grenade away, sending it spinning over the top of a hill. The detonation thumped on the other side. A wave rippled through the sand and hit the monster, bringing its shield down in a flicker of blue. Athena aimed her pulse rifle. A trigger pull sent a burst of blue rounds that tore gaping holes into the alien's armored midsection. The beast slumped to the ground, teal blood gushing out into the sand. The other three aliens let out guttural shrieks. She lined up her next shot at the closest one and pulled the trigger again. This time the rounds ricocheted off its shield. Athena's heart sank. The aliens barreled past their dead comrade, undeterred by the harmless rounds. She took a few steps back up the slope, stopping at the crest. Heart pounding, she finished the rest of her magazine in three bursts. They hit with enough force that two of the creatures stumbled. The third and largest of the beasts recovered quickly, its shield pulsating and solidifying over its armored body. It slithered up the hill, both black eyes focused on Athena. She resisted the urge to scream into the armored face that opened into a black hole so wide she could see down the monster's throat, brimming with barbed teeth. Two long fangs hung from the maw, saliva dripping off their razor-sharp tips. Now Athena knew what had sucked the water from Marlin's body. And she was next. She held her gun like a bat, preparing to swing. A red tongue shot between the two fangs and then retreated back into its gaping mouth. Athena let out a whimper when the alien slithered forward. She swung her rifle, but the beast parried the attack with a smack that sent the rifle cartwheeling away. It wasted no time barreling into her and wrapping its long tail around her chest. Pinned to the sand, she struggled, squirming and swatting with her right hand. The crab face lowered toward her visor. The shrill whistle from its slotted nostrils sounded her fate.
"No, please don't," she pleaded.
Athena knew her words and her fighting were useless. When had the aliens ever showed mercy? The fangs slammed against her visor. Fractures spread in a spider web across the glass. Another impact shattered the glass. She could almost feel her brain slamming against the inside of her skull. Her world started to turn black, and a heavy weight tugged her eyelids closed. The whistling grew louder, and the alien's rancid breath rushed over her face. Her lungs filled with the scalding air. She forced her right eyelid open to the sight of the half-moon hovering over the horrendous features of the monster. She lay, paralyzed by fear, as the beast prepared to drain the water from her body. The leathery tongue flicked out, caressing her cheek, as the monstrosity lowered its fangs toward her exposed face. Boiling saliva lathered her skin. Unable to speak, unable to scream, she simply held in her final breath. Another whistle sounded in the distance, followed by a low rumble, and the ground vibrated under her legs and boots. It took a second to realize this wasn't from the other beasts sniffing the air. Three figures ran toward her position. A black crater smoked at the bottom of the slope, where an explosion had impacted between the other two monsters. Seconds passed before her mind registered what had happened. Her friends had come to her rescue, using rocket-propelled grenades to bring down the shields. One of the beasts dragged the upper half of its body with its pincer arms, its tail connected to its torso by only a few sinewy strands of flesh. The other creature was a pile of smoldering shell. Pulse rounds tore into the dying alien's armored back. A long hiss escaped the grotesque creature as its body collapsed into the sand. The eyes of the monster holding Athena followed the approaching GOA soldiers. Each black orb clicked inside its socket as it moved, placid and emotionless. They fired pulse rifles at the slope and screamed.
"Watch your fire!" one of the men yelled. "There she is!"
A round sizzled past Athena's helmet, and three more slammed into the creature's shield. Everything around her seemed to melt together in a kaleidoscopic fury. The alien let out a screech and retreated down the other side of the hill, leaving her gasping for air.
"Corporal!"
someone shouted. The soldier surrounded her, but she couldn't move. Paralyzed, she lay there, staring up through her shattered visor, the stars gleaming like orbs in the sky.
"Corporal, are you okay?"
The voice belonged to Kyle Griffin, the former Marine turned NTC contractor. Now that Walker was dead, he was the most experienced fighter they had. He knelt by her.
"Can you move?"
I don't know,"
she replied. She managed to wiggle a toe, and then her foot. Griffin cradled her under her back and legs.
"I'm going to carry you back to the GOA," he said.
"Taylor, Malone, you two hold security. Make sure we're not followed."
"We have,"
Athena muttered. Her mind swam. She gasped for air, the heat searing her lungs.
"We have to get to the vehicles."
"Just hang on, Corporal," Griffin said. "You're going to be okay now."
"The vehicles. The military base. The other survivors. We have to get to them."
She mumbled the words, but darkness was closing in. The star-filled sky mesmerized her as Griffin carried her back home to the GOA.
Entry 10199, designee AI Alexia. Lolo passed over the Ghost of Atlantis location during the night. I hacked into the satellite's operating system and then proceeded to watch what was happening on the surface. What I saw would have given a human anxiety. Corporal Athena Rollins was saved with not even a second to spare by a fire team of soldiers that killed all but one of the aliens. The satellite is coming in for another pass, and I await the results of the next images. The corporal seemed to be in rough shape, as the humans would say. I'm not sure of the extent of her injuries, and won't know until they contact me again. I can only hope they aren't life-threatening. She has led this group effectively since the loss of Captain Rick Noble. I do not believe the others would survive without her. But the GOA crew's numbers continue to dwindle. Corporal Marlin and Private Walker were both difficult losses for a team with very few skilled fighters. I switch back to the feed of the Japanese team I am following. They have also lost significant forces in the past few weeks. Originally, the team of 50 soldiers and civilians had taken refuge in a bunker built during World War II. They are led by Commander Suzuki, the great-great-grandson of a samurai warrior and great-grandson of a World War II veteran. I've only seen a grainy feed of his face, but he is a hard man with a mustache, shaved head, and piercing brown eyes. The video feed captured from Lolo now shows a team of 10 soldiers led by Suzuki heading toward an airfield with 3 aircraft that 20 spiders and several sentinels patrol. Their objective is to secure the aircraft and then contact me. I plan to hack into the aircraft's operations systems. If I can do that, I should have a high chance of learning the flight controls and either hijacking them or explaining how they work to the Japanese soldiers. The mission unfolds quickly around the airfield, which is on the edge of a long dead forest. The soldiers move in combat intervals as they take position. Skeletal branches shift in the wind. I imagine them creaking and cracking, disguising the approach of the stealthy soldiers. the right flank and left flank attack simultaneously with electromagnetic weapons that bring down the shields of every organic on the airfield. Suzuki draws two swords and slices his way through the first of the spiders, cutting off all its limbs in two slices and then impaling it with a blade through the head. His men fire pulse rifles, cutting down the other spiders and sentinels before they can attack. In moments, it's over. The team now moves freely toward the three aircraft. Suzuki orders one of his men to transmit a message. Lolo is almost out of range, and the feed flickers in and out from the weak signal. Then there is an incoming transmission.
We have secured the airfield.
The Japanese words come through. It is Lieutenant Hiro, who serves as second in command. He explains that they have secured the airfield and are working on getting me the codes I've requested. A moment later, I hear chatter, something about the ground rumbling. Commander Suzuki comes online and explains they are experiencing an earthquake. I check the data coming in from that location, but there is no sign of tectonic activity, although I do see a slight vibration coming from the direct vicinity of the airfield. Commander, this is no natural phenomenon, I say. Whatever is happening must be organic. I try to zoom in, but Lolo has completely passed out of view now. The feed dies, leaving me without visual and only a tenuous audio connection. Between bouts of static, I hear voices cry that the rumbling is growing stronger. Suzuki manages to send the codes. I enter them into my system and am rewarded with the diagnostics of the alien fighter, the one I've codenamed Shark, due to the salient dorsal fin. The engineering is remarkable, far surpassing the complexity of any human machine, but that's no surprise. Stand by, Commander, I say. Shouting explodes over the transmission, and I hear the Japanese word kaiju, which means giant monster. The word is an apt choice. Suzuki describes a bubble of blue light forming a dome over the forest, and then a limb the size of a building protruding out of that bubble. This is the last detail I hear. The line severs. End entry.
The rhino bucked from the force of the sunspot's explosion. The harness straps pressed tight against Emmanuel's shoulders as the vehicle was tossed on its side, holding him into his seat. Metal screamed in protest. Violently shifting forces lashed Emmanuel against his seat, pummeling him back and forth. He felt the warm rush of blood from the back of his head. The rhino whirred as its self-righting hydraulic system pushed it back upright. A long whoomph sighed out of the system. The noise waned, but Emmanuel's pupils still burned from the brilliant flash of the exploding sunspot. The ringing in his ears started to die. With it came the worrying bark of alarms. The sunspot had let out its last breath with a fury, and Emmanuel was certain it had killed Jeff and David. There was no way the kids could have survived that blast. Grief was a mortal enemy that would have to be overcome. But there would be no overcoming it if they didn't survive these next few minutes. There were still others alive now that he could help. Diego was mashing some buttons at the controls near the driver's seat, and Bauma was trying desperately to reattach an oxygen line that had flung loose. "You okay?" Emmanuel asked Owen. The boy had largely been sheltered by Emmanuel's body, but his eyes were puffy and red. Emmanuel turned to see Holly checking on Jamie. The girl had been belted in, and she appeared more shaken than anything else. "Oxygen system's back in place," Bauma announced, relief in his voice. Several of the alarms shut off.
"We are still within visual proximity of organic threats," Sonia reported.
Emmanuel noticed a slight deviation in her tone. It seemed more robotic than usual. Maybe the transfer from the sunspot hadn't been completed before the spaceship had been destroyed.
"No shit," Ort said, pressing his huge hands against one of the windows. "I can see him with my own eyes. We need to move."
Diego started the rhino inching forward again. The tires wobbled over the terrain like something in the suspension had come loose. Emmanuel made his way to the front cabin. There he let his eyes and fingers scan the various reports flashing across the display. There was still a persistent chirping coming from somewhere.
"I think we got the most critical things back in place," Emmanuel said, "but I can't find the source for that last one."
"Don't think that one's coming from here," Diego said from the driver's seat.
It took a moment for Emmanuel to locate the alarm through his scrambled senses.
Any minuscule amount of hope he had felt after they'd survived that near wreck was vanquished by the sight before him. Near the top of Sophie's cryo chamber, a red light blinked, and the biomonitor on the side flashed scarlet. Dark liquid was mixing with the crisp blue cryostat fluid, clouds spreading out from Sophie's skull.
"Sophie, no!"
Emmanuel squeezed past Holly and Jamie to reach Sophie's chamber. The nausea he'd already been feeling wrapped its fingers tighter around his stomach. A long beep trailed from the EKG, reporting that her heart had completely stopped.
"Oh, God, no."
Other voices called around him, but he ignored them all. The rhino was still charging forward, even as the dust storm swallowed them. There was no way a little tumble in the rhino was going to take her, not after everything they'd already been through. Emmanuel unlocked the drain to the cryo chamber. It no longer mattered that they had less than 2 days' worth of cryostat fluid to keep her in a protected comatose state. If her heart wasn't working, no amount of cryostat fluid would bring her back. The drain dumped the fluid onto the floor of the rhino, the liquid sloshing about their feet. He unlatched the lock to the chamber, and the rest of the fluid poured out over him. The oily fluid clung to his clothes as he reached for Sophie's body. She slumped into his arms, and he grasped desperately at her wrist. A pulse throbbed against his fingers. It was weak and slow, but it was a pulse nonetheless. His eyes flitted to the loose tubes and cables dangling from the top of the chamber. Sophie had been torn from the cryo chamber's intubation system in the crash. He stretched one of the wires from the top of the chamber and plugged it into the sensor secured at the bottom of Sophie's skull. While the EKG no longer bleated, another ominous message flashed across the biomonitors. It warned of increased intracranial pressures.
"A concussion," Emmanuel said. "If we're lucky..."
He knew it could be way worse. With Holly's help, he cleared Sophie's hair back to access the injured area. A cut several inches long bled profusely.
"Here,"
Holly said, handing him an emergency first aid kit. Emmanuel opened the kit. His fingers trembled as he pulled out the suture. He was a biologist, not a surgeon, though he'd had plenty of experience operating on mice and rabbits for biological experiments. Never once had he so much as scrubbed in to even observe a procedure performed on a human. Stitches, at least, he could do. This wasn't so different from suturing a mouse. His fingers slipped as he stuck the needle through Sophie's scalp, pulling the wound closed. He tightened his grip and hooked the needle in again. Loop by loop, he brought the skin together. Even as he approached the end, his fingers didn't stop trembling. But it wasn't the suturing he was worried about. Taking care of this wound would do nothing if what the biomonitor indicated was true. Because of her concussion, cerebrospinal fluid was building up on her already inflamed brain. She'd been in a critical state ever since the RVAMP on Earth had cooked most of the organic nanobots embedded in her tissues. The foreign nanobots had elicited the sustained response of her passive immune system. Her body had been fighting back against the nanobots, and now it looked like the concussion might have stolen any chance of recovery.
"You know what we need to do,"
Holly said, locking eyes with Emmanuel. Ord and Bauma appeared confused, but Emmanuel knew exactly what Holly meant. The two of them had the most medical experience among the group, and even that was pitifully little when Emmanuel considered what needed to happen to keep Sophie alive now. The rhino continued bucking against the rocky terrain, the storm winds shrieking around them. The delicate surgery Emmanuel needed to perform would be made even more difficult by these conditions, but he had no other choice than to improvise. All the injuries, the inflamed tissues and broken blood vessels that had been present when Sophie underwent the cryo procedure were still there, but the most immediate need was to relieve the increasing pressure on her brain. "We've got to drain her cerebrospinal fluid," Emmanuel said, "or she risks neurological death." A host of emotions flooded his mind. He wanted to simultaneously hold Sophie tight and curse the world for letting her end up like this. Thoughts of Jeff and David still pervaded the darkness. He shoved everything away. There was no room for emotion now. After cleansing his thoughts, he adopted the mindset he'd worn as a graduate student going in to perform surgery on a mouse for an experiment.
intense focus lent him the ability to manipulate the fragile physiologies of those tiny animals. He needed to draw on those old experiences now, resurrecting the steady hands and cool mindset that had enabled those past successes. But it was exceedingly difficult to rely on only his past strength. Equally real memories of surgical failures, of being unable to stop the rupture in a mouse's aorta, or nicking the liver and watching the animal bleed to death as he desperately tried to clot the wound,